Chances are you have a smartphone and use it dozens of times a day for work, play, and otherwise. And your phone does a lot with little input from you, notifying you when an email comes through, refreshing your social media feeds in the background, pulling up estimated travel time when you have somewhere to be. And of course, the big thing now is AI-based virtual assistants. The bottom line is that little computer in your palm is getting more and more work done on its own. Same thing's going on in transportation. Everyone is working on cars that can drive themselves, as you've probably heard by now. AI, machine learning, and neural networking is the key. Just like it's happening for that phone shoved in your pocket, cars are going to figure out more things for themselves and do more tasks unprompted by you. Eventually, they'll take over the task of driving completely. That's the future. Behind every AI machine learning application is a scientist or engineer trying to figure out how to piece all this stuff together.
I think a little bit, yes, but I didn't really appreciate that I was interested in science until I actually got to university. I think I always wanted to join the military. And when I got to the age of 18, I realized I was actually probably better at sort of doing science than I was sort of doing some of those more traditional military things. So the whole studying and then moving into the defense industry was just a sort of a natural progression of that.
This is Daniel Clark, lead engineer of Sensor Fusion and Sensor Security in Mentor's Automotive Business Unit based in Munich. He's also a part-time lecturer in communication and electronic warfare at Cranfield University in the UK. Daniel has been writing a few blogs for us on AI, machine learning, and neural networks, just to give his take on the history of the field and also explain what we're trying to do with it at Mentor, particularly when it comes to sensor fusion for object detection and classification. Turns out Daniel has a PhD in astrophysics. You know, we're talking stars, galaxies, cosmic rays, dark matter and energy, black holes, general relativity. What the heck does this have to do with a self-driving car?
Yeah, I sort of sometimes flippantly like to describe astrophysics as essentially sensors that are on the ground and they're looking up at the sky to understand what's above us. In the military, when you start to look at sort of electronic warfare and sort of cyber technologies, is you have sensors maybe on aircraft or other platforms that are sort of observing sort of other signals out in the environment and trying to understand what those signals are and what they mean. And then actually, when you look at autonomous cars, is they're very similar to the two previous parts in that actually from a sensing perspective, is there are a bunch of sensors that are sitting on a platform that are sort of observing the environment. So actually astrophysics, electronic warfare, and autonomous driving have quite a lot in common in terms of the sort of underlying sort of techniques and methodologies. So the mathematics, the statistics of the sensors, how you integrate those sensors together, it's all very similar. And of course, another thing I like to sort of state in some of my lectures on autonomous driving and particularly the sort of security aspects of autonomous driving is if you think about being a child and building up a Lego spaceship, the first thing you do when you've got this Lego spaceship when you're a 10-year-old boy is you kind of destroy it, you smash it up, because actually understanding how to break things is actually very interesting in itself. And so the security part comes from sort of trying to understand how you take all of these sensor technologies and you kind of make them work in a way that helps you to sort of control the system in a way that it shouldn't necessarily be controlled.
Conversations about autonomous driving, the timetable for getting cars on the roads, frequently loop back to simulation. Simulation is key for safety testing. It's also a big part of teaching these cars to drive themselves, to function as autonomous robots on wheels that can deal with all the weirdness on the roads.
I think the key point for us of using AI, and I'm actually going to sort of change that to machine learning, is if we think about what we're trying to do in our sort of automotive task, is we're trying to understand the sort of the physical state of objects in the environment. And what's very important there is understanding what the object is so that we can predict how it's likely to behave in the future. So for example, a car that's stationary can only have sort of very linear motion starting to move forwards and backwards, whereas a pedestrian, on the other hand, might have sort of very erratic behavior. So it can move in almost any direction and it can accelerate quite quickly. So for us, the idea of sort of using machine learning is to Once we've understood where the object is, what its orientation is, what velocity it has, is then using machine learning to understand what is the object and how is it relevant to the sort of driving scenario. So the concept of machine learning is really to understand what the objects are that we're seeing in the environment.
I know that sort of comparisons and analogies only go so far, but is there any sort of analog to the way like human beings process image data and make decisions about objects as we travel down the road?
Okay, so I think, yeah, this is, in my mind, almost one of the failings of the AI community. So I very much see the AI community trying to mimic sort of biological systems and biological behavior, whereas actually coming from a more sort of fundamental natural science background is I actually look at things from a mathematical perspective. Now, if you look at the way the human uses eyes to recognize things, it's actually a very complex process because the world around us is complex, it's dynamic, it's partially obscured, and most importantly, it's analog. And what a lot of the sort of computer science and even the computer vision community try to do is they try to use digital systems to represent that world. So if you think about a camera, is the digital camera is making a discrete and quite a coarse representation of that complex analog environment, and trying to make this sort of discretely sampled in time and space representation of the world by measuring the sort of intensity of photons arriving on the CCD or the CMOS chip. And so what you're ending up with is essentially a very sort of coarse representation of a complex world. And it's like using an astrophysics analogy. If we take a picture of a star, your astrophysicists try to understand what the sort of the life cycle of that star is, what the formation physics of that star is, purely from a single image. And actually, when you look at the computer vision world, trying to use those single discrete images to understand the world around you from a biological perspective becomes, I think, a little disparate in terms of how you achieve this. Having come from a natural sciences background, actually trying to look at it from a mathematics perspective is that, well, you're trying to understand the noisy location of an object. You're trying to understand or predict what that object is based on its sort of physical properties. So in terms of using sort of biological inspirations for driving machine learning, I'm not convinced that's the right approach necessarily, because the brain, the eyes, they're very complex systems, whereas actually our computers, our sort of computer vision sensors, they're quite crude systems and they're quite low resolution. So I'm not 100% convinced that the sort of the analogy is really there.
It's still tough to beat millions of years of evolution.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually common sense.
As human beings, we're smart enough to know that if we walk into moving traffic, we might get hit. We don't need to get into an accident to understand that. Computers and self-driving systems don't come with the same built-in instincts, at least not yet. Part of the project of figuring out autonomy is teaching cars to predict or anticipate something, corner cases, they haven't experienced, or to get them to teach themselves.
So one of my favorite examples, and it doesn't work very well for a podcast, is I take my mobile phone and I put it on the edge of a desk and I leave it kind of half hanging there. And sort of there's this knowledge inside of me and of my colleagues that I give this example to, and they sit there and they watch the phone and they get nervous about it because they understand if the phone falls on the floor, it'll break. I'll have to get the phone repaired, or I'll have to buy a new one. I won't have a phone for a couple of days, so I won't be able to call people and speak to people. And it's really that sort of understanding of the consequences, the second, the third order consequences that the sort of the biological system has that perhaps the computer doesn't, because it's difficult to teach a computer the sort of, the inconvenience of a phone being broken. That's it. I mean, a computer can only learn what it sees and what it's subjected to. So, I think maybe a, An interesting point there is the context of sort of supervised learning, is that if you have a big neural network, whether it's a shallow, narrow neural network, or whether it's one of these big, deep and wide neural networks, is they can only ever learn examples that they're exposed to. So they can never extrapolate, they can never, or rather, perhaps the right term is never efficiently extrapolate. So you really have to expose them to something happening in order for them to learn.
A major point around simulation has to do with quantity, with the inputs that are used to train the AI. This follows what Daniel's talking about. All the testing isn't just done to ensure the safety of the subsystems and the vehicles themselves. It's also about exposing the self-driving technology to a lot of scenarios that can occur on the road. So I asked Daniel how sensor fusion works alongside simulation technology.
There also are more and more anecdotes and studies and quotes at conferences about just this huge testing requirement. I guess there's a 2016 RAND Corporation study that talks about need for 5 billion miles of testing to sort of definitively say that autonomous vehicles are safer than human drivers. And so it's 200,000 times around the earth. It would take decades or centuries or more. So obviously simulation is going to play a big part in sort of definitively testing autonomous vehicles. How does the sort of raw data sensor fusion stuff that you're working on, the technology that we're working on, how might that fit in a simulation context and be useful? Not just ultimately deployed on the roads, but as we test vehicles and get ready for level 4 or 5 and even earlier. How might your technology and the stuff that your team is working on be beneficial in simulation contexts?
I actually have sort of two answers to this. So I think in the first case, in terms of that requirement for so many, many miles of testing of autonomous vehicles in order to verify them, I think what they're really looking for is that very small percentage of occurrences that the car doesn't necessarily know how to deal with. And I'm actually preparing a presentation for a conference in a couple of weeks. And I've come across an example from Russia, where I'm trying to find things that are completely abnormal for a driving scenario. And I found a picture of a car that is upright on its boot, like the front of the car is pointing to the sky, and it's stationary in the middle of the road. And that's an example that is just completely random, very, very rare. You're only ever going to see one or two of those in, that whole, hundreds of thousands of miles of testing. Now, going back to the answer of the previous question, I kind of suggested that a system can only ever learn what it observes. So what I think we need to do is to come up with a way of exposing a system to these very rare cases without having to drive all of the mundane miles that you sort of require in order to observe that singular, very, very rare case. I think the second answer is coming down to this in terms of the simulation. Simulation will help you to understand how your system behaves a large percentage of the time. So, for example, if you were to use sort of a confidence bound of 95%, I believe that you could simulate 95% of the driving scenario. So you could expose your algorithms to 95% of what the algorithms are only ever going to see. But what simulation can't necessarily offer are those very random occurrences. And, one of the examples we use here, Munich, it's got some fantastic carnivals and beer culture, is how does your car deal with the time at carnival when there's somebody dressed up in an elephant costume and he's crawling across the road because he's really, really drunk. I've never seen that personally when I've been driving around Munich, but I'm sure that, there's going to be one incident where a car will see something like this. And maybe it's not an elephant costume, maybe it's a different costume, but it's that really rare occurrence that kind of demands this requirement for very high sort of volumes of testing. I think where simulation will help us is in verifying our system or validating the system where the behavior is for all intents and purposes, quite normal.
Of course, I have to ask, because I've had the image of the car on its boot since you gave that example. What's the story? What's the story of the car sitting upright in the road?
I've no idea. I had to do like a YouTube search of only in Russia. So I don't know what the context behind that was. But it's a great example. How many times have you seen that, right?
That is an edge case if there ever was one.
Now, maybe I can give you some of our thinking on this is that, one of the things we're trying to build into our machine learning context is that it only ever classifies things that it needs to classify. So it doesn't use processing capacity where it doesn't need to. And the example of this car standing upright or even, on its roof sideways on the road is the car doesn't necessarily need to understand that it's a car that's upside down or it's, standing upright. What it needs to know is that there's an object that's stationary in the road, and it then needs to be able to take some action to avoid that. So there's kind of two answers there in that, well, actually, all the system needs to do is to understand that there's something in the way. Understanding what the object is that's in the way, that's a further question, and I'm not 100% convinced that that needs to be answered in every single case.
It must have to do with rowdy World Cup fans, is all I can think of.
I like to ask all our guests a series of rapid-fire questions. Again, the idea is that self-driving cars use a range of sensors to get to know their surrounding environment. I want to try a range of questioning to get to know the guests. Okay, so that's a little cheesy. I'm also copying podcasts that I like to listen to myself. Anyway, here we go for Daniel.
Four quick questions just to close here. First question, what's your favorite go-to source of information about machine learning or neural networks or AI? It can be a blog, a book, an individual reporter or analyst?
Yeah, I actually go to Google Scholar, and sometimes I'll do a search for a particular topic, and I'll limit the years to sort of, pre-2010 or pre-2005, because there's a lot of knowledge from the last decades, which we've kind of almost forgotten because we think of artificial intelligence as being a sort of a new field of science and technology.
Great. Second question. What advice do you have for someone who might want to get into the world of automotive systems engineering and maybe specifically work on autonomous driving applications?
I would almost say follow a sort of a natural sciences degree path. So, really understanding the fundamental mathematics, the fundamental physics really helps to understand how to bring all of the systems together in a way that I'm not convinced that pure computer science or pure sort of electrical engineering allows you to do.
Third question, what would you say, what is the sort of biggest technical problem or roadblock standing in the way of full level 4, level 5 autonomous vehicles?
For level 5, I think it's actually going to be the driving environment because it's such a complex background and environment that it's very difficult to develop algorithms that can account for all of those cases, and then also for the small percentage of cases like the sort of upright car that are just completely unimaginable, but the system will have to deal with. And yeah, in the sort of current driving infrastructure, I'm not convinced that's possible.
And last question, what's the best part of your job today? What are you most sort of intellectually engaged in?
The best part is actually working with most of my colleagues is seeing some of the sort of, junior scientists really starting to appreciate and understand the technical challenges and then the techniques and methodologies which can be used to address those challenges. So for me, it's really, the people that work in this domain and seeing them develop and seeing them solve the problems and generate solutions for themselves. And I was going to say sometimes, but most of the times generate solutions that, not even I have thought of.
Thanks again to Daniel Clark, lead engineer for sensor fusion and sensor security in Mentor's automotive business unit based in Munich. We'll include links to some of Daniel's blogs in the show notes. We have lots more good discussions coming up, including an interview on automotive audio, which turns out to be a big deal when it comes to self-driving cars. We're all going to be talking to our cars a lot more in the future, it seems. We also have conversations coming up on wire harnesses for electric and autonomous vehicles, on dealing with data overload and data exhaust, given all the sensors on self-driving cars, and on smart cities and the relationship of traffic management technology to self-driving applications. Thanks for joining us today, and for more, visit Siemens PLM Software online. Siemens PLM Software is a world-leading provider of product lifecycle management and manufacturing operations management software. We help thousands of companies realize innovation by optimizing their processes from planning and development through manufacturing, production, and support.